Every form that and the wildest imagination could come up with, it'll be somewhere in the ocean. The most, wow, this is, comes out of somebody's dream. Maybe they're on acid. So am I saying that the universe is on acid? Well, something like that. Because there is obviously some wild creation going on. Some incredible dream of most gigantic proportions. And that's only on in one ocean, on one planet. And then on land, millions of insects, different forms of different plants, and then on the level that you cannot see, the microorganisms. And, oh, it's just unbelievable. And that's only one tiny planet of trillions, the vastness of the universe. And everywhere there's the game of form. What a gigantic dream. But built into that dream, because what is in each human is a microcosmic version of the entire universe. So the awakening of humans is also the awakening of the universe, because you cannot separate the human from the entire universe. They need each other. They are totally one. There would not even be a universe without the perceiving consciousness. It's the one consciousness that comes through humans creates the universe as perceived by humans. Other forms perceive a different universe. It's all the same, and yet it's different. The one consciousness dreaming innumerable dreams. Impossible to understand. But what we see when we look at humans, they are immersed in a kind of dream also. When you're totally identified with your reactions, and you play out the drama of your life in relationships, at work, and you go, it's, and you get elated. Oh, it's great, I made it. Oh, it's, and a few months later, you go down, you lost it again. Oh, it's a stage. All the world's a stage. Shakespeare saw that, and all men and women are merely players. And this is the stuff that dreams are made on. So humans can wake up out of that dreamlike existence that they are otherwise immersed in, where there is no sense of who they are apart from the script that they act out, the inner script. Complete identification. And then there's the possibility of awakening, becoming aware of that which underlies the script, without which there would be no script, there would be nothing. There's a vast realm of still, aware presence from where you can see the dream world without being immersed in it. The body is still in it, but there is a seeing. You can see your own drama. You can see yourself playing out your own script. And gradually, there's the awakening is, something arises that is not part of the play of form, but that can see the play of form. And if that can arise in you, it means it is a universal movement. So through you, the universe not only wants to experience this gigantic dream, there's something else built into the dream, and that is the need of the universe to awaken out of the dream. It loves that even more than the dream. And that is, so what we cannot even begin to conceive of the magnitude of what looks only like some people in a room sitting, listening, speaking, that this is part of a much larger movement that's connected to even the most distant galaxy, is part of something that is happening in the universe. It is an event created by the one life that is the universe. So you think on a personal level, it's good to sit here because your life becomes lighter, free. So you feel a relief on a personal level, suffering, less and less suffering, clarity arising, stillness arising, a sense of connectedness, of beingness, a deeper sense of I. But that is all a huge event of cosmic proportions. So the awakening is the awakening of the totality through this form. That is the purpose of your life, to be that. So you align yourself with the larger purpose. The secondary purpose is whatever you do in your life, and you can bring the opening into anything that you do, almost anything. If you can't, you leave it. Some things have to be left, and other things are fine. It happens wherever you are. So this is what we temporarily call stillness in you, becoming aware that that dimension is already there. Coming to the end of identification with thinking and realizing that you are more fully yourself when you do not think, without trying not to think. There are many here who already experience the state of being free of thinking without even knowing it. You may be walking and looking at a tree and seeing the magnificence of that spectacle of the dying leaves in all their beauty. And you're perceiving that in and through stillness. And perhaps a minute later you might say something to a person next to you and say, "Isn't that wonderful?" And you may not realize that for a minute or 10 seconds or 5 seconds you have looked at that, and there was a deep sense of response, of oneness, or even with it, but no interpretation. And then you notice something strange. Whenever you look at something for the first time, if you're very alert, you will notice that. When you glance at something for the first time, whatever it is, your head shifts, your vision, your field of vision shifts, it goes and it is here. There's a lot of nature around here. It may be a tree, a flower, the sky, or it may be something man-made, whatever it is, but nature
Lesson 2, continued on disc 3.
Here, there's a lot of nature around here. It may be a tree, a flower, the sky, or it may be something man-made, whatever it is. But nature particularly is helpful in this practice at first. You notice the first moment of looking at something, there's always a space of no thought. It may be 1 second. It may be 2 seconds. Now, most human beings are not aware of that, and with some human beings, the space of no thought is so brief that they can't capture it, because immediately thought comes in after half a second. But there was half a second. there's always a space before thought can come in. There is a looking, a seeing. And in with you, that space will now become larger. And in many of you, it is already quite spacious. In other words, the spaciousness around your sense perceptions. So notice that it is already there, but as you become aware of it, the spaciousness grows around your sense perceptions. So, and now comes, this is a magnificent thing, it's a great mystery that in past ages people had to spend 25 years in a monastery to be told this. The master would say, okay, you work with me for 20 years and then ask me again that question. But now things are speeding up. We haven't got that much time, in a good sense, on the planet. We are running out of time, and that's wonderful. It's shrinking. So when you see something, there's a sense perception. Can you be aware both of what arises in your sense perception, what you're looking at, or it may be listening? And can you be aware of the awareness, which is the stillness, in which that sense perception happens? And that stillness, that awareness is, one could say, the space around it. So there is a spacious field and there's a sense perception, and you are not interpreting what you see for a while. There's no need. There's a deep knowing, but there's no interpretation. There's not conceptual knowing. Not that you've lost your ability to have concepts, but when you need them, they'll be there. Words, concepts, thoughts. But you are no longer compulsively trapped in concepts. You are exiting a conceptualized reality. Oh, that is the awakening. You are stepping out of inhabiting a totally conceptualized universe, which is mental conditioning. Everything is called something, interpreted, labeled, named. And so a great freedom arises of perceiving through the unconditioned consciousness. And this is, you are here to experience that and to see that it is already, that movement is already happening in you, that freeing yourself from compulsive conceptualization is already happening. And it is happening when you look at a tree or a flower or another human being, and it enters your field of vision, and in that moment there's pure perception and no labeling it in any way. Just a field of stillness. And it may be that it's only there for a few seconds, but see if you can capture that space. And that's not perhaps a very good way of saying it, because you cannot capture stillness. It's, see if you can be attentive and see if you can notice that. And that noticing is vital, because as you notice the stillness in which your perception happens, the space or the stillness expands. So as you perceive things, you are now inhabiting two dimensions. One is the dimension of form, which is all around you, continuously fluctuating. And they may be outer forms or they may be inner forms as emotions, thoughts. And the other dimension is the dimension of the formless consciousness, pure consciousness, pure awareness. The other is the dimension of the object consciousness, things. So you inhabit the dimension of the manifested without being lost in it. Because you also dwell in the unmanifested. You dwell in the realm of stillness. And even if at first the spaces of stillness don't last for very long, it's good enough. 3 seconds of looking at a flower with no thought is good enough. And as you become aware of there's not only the flower, I'm naming it now, but the awareness is not the naming. You become aware of the flower and you become aware of the field of awareness or the stillness. And this looks like a dualistic thing, but it isn't. It only becomes dualistic when we speak about it. When you speak about becoming aware of awareness, it looks like two things. Aware of awareness. But that's only because of we are using language which has a subject and an object in a sentence. What is really happening is self-awareness. You're becoming aware. Awareness is becoming aware of itself. So that is the dimension, and it's hard to talk about that. And in a way, the author of the Tao Te Ching is right when he says at the beginning of this book of wisdom, the Tao Te Ching, if you can speak about it, that's not it. So it's not, the words have to be seen as for what they are, just pointers. So this is a beautiful practice here. Walk around wherever you are, sit, stand, lie, walk. Be aware of yourself as the aware presence, as the stillness in which everything is seen and heard. And so you become like a little child. It's not for nothing that Jesus said, you must become as little children if you want to enter the kingdom of heaven. Now what he is pointing to, and he's not saying exactly that, it's always just an approximation. It does not mean you return to that state, because there's only that quality that a little child has in whom the conceptual reality has not yet developed. And when that little child in whom the accumulation of words and concepts in the mind has not happened yet, that little child looks at the universe, and you sometimes can see it when you see a 1-year-old, 1.5, before language takes possession of their minds, the way they look is thoughtless awareness. And then they smile at you, there's the pure joy of being. And you can see that that which shines through is magnificent. And then gradually the veil descends, because the child is programmed to ask, the mind of the child is programmed to ask, Daddy, what's that? And then Daddy says, that's a tree. And then the mind says, tree, tree. That's tree. Next time the child sees a tree, that open, complete openness is no longer quite as open, because then the child looks at the tree and then the mind says, oh, tree. And 2 years, 3 years later, the mind is already possessed with concepts. So when Jesus says that, it's pointing as little children, you walk around in that state of openness, of non-labeling, the state of original innocence, which replaces the dysfunction, the collective dysfunction of the human mind that we could call original sin, if we go beyond the habitual interpretations of sin. There's no doubt that there's a dysfunction in humanity. Look at human history. That's why they talk of original sin. It means sin means missing the target. If you the original Greek word translated means missing the target. That's what sin means in the original. And in other words, you miss the point of your whole existence. And if you miss the point of your whole existence, you suffer. And that eventually works too. It wakes you up eventually. So it seems insignificant at first to the human mind to say you can look at something and notice whenever you first look at something that there's a moment of spacious presence before the mind comes in and calls it something. And if that can be sustained, not through effort, not through wanting, not through some kind of act of willpower, but if that can be sustained simply by noticing that space of aware presence when it arises, and then even as a human being comes into your field of vision, walks in through the door, appears in front of you, you look, and there's a moment of non-labeling. Let's say somebody you have never met before comes, and you look, and there's not a single thought in your head for perhaps 5 seconds. But if you notice that in the first moment there's just there's a field of awareness in which the perception happens before the labeling comes in, you may find that it expands. And you could still be in the state of just looking a minute later. And you can even talk. And every time a sentence has come to an end, you re-enter the state of spacious awareness. A word has been uttered, and you're back in space. And then your words have a different quality too, because now they come out of that dimension. They have an aliveness. They will touch the other human being. What you say has the essence of that freshness of being. Not the old stuff that otherwise is your mind. You're telling them, a minute later after meeting a person, you tell them the old story of me. So what do you do for a living? Well, blah, 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 blah. You can talk about that also and then step back knowing that's not who you are. So who are you? You are the stillness. That's where your true sense of I am comes from. Of beingness. So this is the opportunity as you sit here to be in that state. You don't really need to think as you sit here. I certainly don't think as I speak. The words are heard as they come out of the mouth. I hear them as you do. So there's nobody teaching anybody. Do I know more than you? No, of course not. Probably less than most of you. What I know is the realm of stillness. And that's not anybody's personal achievement, because everybody has that as their essence. So what I know is your essence. That's why it's nice to sit with me, because otherwise, why would anybody come? What you enjoy most is to be with yourself, but in the true sense, not the mind-made self, the deepest self. Now, ultimately, you don't have to go anywhere. This is just a temporary stage in the evolution of humanity where you have to travel somewhere to be with yourself. Now, some of you have traveled to India, and perhaps you already know you don't have to go to India, and so Omega is a little closer. And the next stage is you don't have to go to Omega. Oh, sorry. Oh. You may go for the enjoyment. I sometimes enjoy listening to spiritual teachers who may be using different words, and yet the truth is there, and it's a wonderful, deep joy in hearing it in a slightly different form. When you meet a human being and don't label them, or if that is not yet possible, at least not for more than a few seconds, and then compulsive labels come into your mind, what you can do, however, is to recognize the labels that come into your mind as just that, without believing in them completely. Because the mind is the compulsion to interpret everybody and everything. It does that to other human beings. You form judgments. You meet them and you look at them. And the more you're identified with your mind, the quicker you are in your judgments of the other human being. You know them exactly. On what it might even be true occasionally. You may have seen something that's actually there, but what you have seen and thought that this person is some conditioning in the other person, not who that person is. Or you have completely imposed your own conditioned perception on that person. But you can recognize any thought you have about a human being as just a thought and a perspective and one of many possible thoughts and not the ultimate truth. So you recognize the relativity of your thinking. The relativity of your thinking. There's one spiritual teaching that works entirely with that. It's a particular, Byron Katie has this teaching that whatever thought comes into your head about another person, about yourself, or about your situation, You look at the thought and you ask yourself, can I really know that this is so? Is that can I really know that this is true? And if you really look at the thought and you say, I can't really know that this is true, this thought that I have about this person or this situation. So it's a stepping, a continuous letting go of identification with thought. And then gradually the thought, the compulsive thoughts arise less and less. And as the compulsive thoughts arise less and less, more space is there. That's why we are here, for the arising of space, stillness. And in many of you, it's already happening as you sit there. But there are some, I can see or sense a few, not many, fields of restless energy here and there. Or other skull. You may want to try feeling your hands as you sit here, because you are restless, because your entire attention is still lodged in the head, in the mind. And the mind must feel either restless or anxious or totally bored sitting here. So if you cannot get out of that, the body really is the... If you can simply begin by feeling the inner energy field in your hands, and that there is... Yes, there is an aliveness there. You can feel that there is a hand, not externally, but internally. If you closed your eyes and somebody asked you, is your left hand still there? For a moment, you would have to internally, so to speak, look for it. And then you would say, you would feel something. You say, yeah. And then the question is, how do you know that it's still there? Because it's not touching anything, you're not moving it. And then, of course, you will know, because I can feel it. I can feel its energy. That's how I know that the left hand is still there. Not a memory that it was there when I last looked. And then your answer comes from the memory. Yeah, it's still there. I saw it a minute ago. And again, these things to the mind seem insignificant, but they are of tremendous significance. To begin to inhabit the body, which takes you out of inhabiting the mind exclusively. If you can feel your left hand or your right hand, you can also feel other parts of the body. You have to just start somewhere that becomes the entry point into the body. I'm speaking particularly to all of you, but to those who are either bored out of their minds. Well, if you were bored out of your mind, you would be okay. But those who are still bored in their minds or are feeling restless and are thereby missing the essence of this gathering. Get into your body. Get in there. Feel the legs, the feet, the hands, the arms. So what if you can feel one hand, you can feel the other hand simultaneously. You feel them both at the same time. The feeling of hand. Feet. You can feel both feet also as you feel your hands. Subtle at first. Some people feel almost like a tingling sensation. But some people feel a warmth. And then can you feel the trunk of your body, the belly? Sometimes to feel the belly is very helpful to be in there. Taking one deep breath or two or three deep breaths and following the breath with your attention and feel the belly or the abdomen, is the more polite word. Feel the abdomen rising as you breathe in into the belly. And for a moment, there's a cessation. The belly is full and then breathe out. So breathing a few times into the deep, take the belly breath, which means you have to follow. It's not just a practice, an external practice. The essence here is that you follow the breath with your attention and then you move into the belly. So the attention leaves the head and moves into the body. So you breathe into the belly. And there you could say you're in, this is the center of the body. Around here, solar plexus also, but belly is a beautiful center. And once you've breathed in a few times into the belly, you can actually feel the energy field of the belly here, and you rest there. And from there radiates out energy into the rest of the body. Hara, the center, as the Japanese call it. So here, and you may notice then, when you look at not only the images of the Chinese fat Buddha with a huge belly, who laughs all the time because he has no problems left. Toothless old man with a huge belly, who, whatever you say to him, come with your problems, he will laugh at you. But you may also notice that the Indian Buddhas and other Southeast Asian Buddhas, most of them have a very slight protrusion in the belly region. So there's the belly, there's a little bit of just slight, because they rest here. Their center of gravity is not in the head, as it is with modern humans, Western especially, but the whole world has become Western. So the center of gravity is not in the head. The center of gravity is in the center of your physically perceived body, but it goes beyond body. So you rest there. And so to sense this, that field of aliveness is beautiful. It takes you out of the head. Your attention moves down here. You unite with the all-pervasive intelligence that is beyond the mind that inhabits your body, that is only an expression of the one intelligence. It's the intelligence that lives in your body as the life energy that regulates thousands of complicated functions, complicated from the point of view of the human mind, that regulates, coordinates thousands of functions in the body simultaneously. Everything is just right. If one thing slightly were maladjusted, the body would die immediately. You would collapse. Temperature, heart rate, lungs, circulation, innumerable things that you could spend the next 5,000 years analyzing how the human body works, and you still wouldn't get to the end of it. And that's only the outer body. So there's an intelligence at work that is vast. So if you can feel your body, that is an entry point into that vastness. And the deeper you go, if you do it for yourself, you can do it with your eyes closed at first, so that you become familiar with inhabiting the body. and realize as you go deeper that it's not really about the body. It's about sensing that vast spaciousness that is here. Vast spaciousness. So you enter the spaciousness through the body. And then everything comes to life once your body comes to life. And then you look around and open your eyes without losing the inner sense of body. Then you feel everything is more alive suddenly. It participates in that because you are not deadening it anymore with mental abstractions, concepts, labels. It has always been alive. You couldn't see it anymore, couldn't feel it anymore, sense it anymore. So if I recommend that each one of you spend some time going into nature and being perhaps with choose something like a tree or a flower or a patch of ground or a landscape, maybe the lake, the little lake we have here, whatever, or a rock with moss growing on the rock. There are some trails here, beautiful moss growing over ancient rocks. And just be there, be with it, and as you look, feel the energy field of the inner body at the same time. That makes it much easier to look without mental interference, to have a space of stillness as you look. So you're present within and without, and you look from there. Ah. The inner body becomes a root, that which roots you in the present moment, anchors you in the present moment, and takes you out of mind. And if then mind starts working again, anything, if you are doing anything creative in your life, becomes still first. Before the act of creation, there needs to be stillness. Nothing creative can come out of the accumulations of the mind. The mind can be an instrument to give something form, but the inspiration, the creative impulse, comes from a deeper level. It comes from the stillness, the presence. So go into the body and feel that. You don't need to think anymore there. And then you look, and then at some point a thought comes or a creative movement comes. It may be dance, whatever. It may be a word that you speak, words that come out of your mouth. But they come out of the stillness. So getting in touch with that is a simple and beautiful way of entering the realm of no thought. And then thought can operate beautifully and is not going to create problems as it usually does. Because most of your life problems are created by thought. Life only has challenges. The only place where a challenge can come is in the now. Apart from a challenge that comes in the now, there is no problem except in the head. The power to face challenges is always there in the now. But you cannot face problems because they have no reality. Always use as the criterion to tell you whether your problems are real, ask, what's the problem at this moment? What can I do about it now? Nothing. I'm lying in bed, it's 4 a.m. Then go into the body. Okay. Ah, it feels good to be alive. and I thought I had problems. At 9 o'clock in the morning, when you enter the office, you open the door, and there sits this man who you were thinking about all night, who is creating problems for you, and his mouth opens, words come out of his mouth, and you bring an alert, aware presence to it, and you look and listen, and then words come out of your mouth. They won't be reactive anymore. They will be a response, not an old reaction. Then the words will be true. They will be just right for that moment. And they're not rehearsed. Or no words come. You may look at him and walk out. Nobody can predict. Right action. Buddhism sometimes talks of right action, right speech, right this, right that. I've forgotten the list. I can't remember things. But those things, they come out of right presence. You have to be present. Otherwise, you cannot manufacture or try to bring about right words, right speech, right actions. Okay, I'm trying very hard here to say the right thing. I'm trying hard to do the right thing. It's not working. You can't try to do the right, because the right thing comes out of a particular state of consciousness. Spontaneity, intuition, realization comes out of stillness. So in this shift, thinking loses its capacity to make you unhappy. Thoughts for a while still arise, but they're not that overpowering anymore. You're not totally in them anymore. And then space arises. The ability to not think arises when there is nothing much to think about, when life would be far more joyful if we are not interpreting this moment. And if you live in alignment with this moment, a lot of the time you're better off not interpreting this moment. Let it be. It is. And out of that state, necessary action comes. Or doesn't. If it's not necessary, it doesn't. So the revolutionary shift, the evolutionary and revolutionary shift in humans, in human consciousness, is to enter that dimension where compulsive thinking comes to an end. Compulsive thinking comes to an end. To transcend thought and realize that you are more fully yourself and more intelligent when you are not thinking. And when thought then comes in, should it be needed, it will be more effective, more powerful, more creative. So you are here to be able to learn to enter that realm of, this is the realm of great power, the realm of pure awareness. And it's not just the words that are pointing to it here. As you sit it arises because there is that realm itself is here in the energy field of this gathering. And it is very helpful, even if your mind is saying, okay, I'm not really getting this. Of course it's not really getting it. The mind cannot get the essence of it. So the most helpful thing about this gathering is the energy field of stillness or presence that works, comes from within you, but is also here in this field. That's the essence, and that's what works most powerfully, that transforms you. The words are additional helps, additional pointers. And also to keep you entertained while you sit there in the energy field. So practice. Practice again is the wrong word because it implies some kind of effort almost, but it is effortless. Pure seeing, pure listening, become aware. Whenever you look at something, at first there is a space before thinking happens. As you become aware of the space, you may find that it expands. What that means in relationship to other humans, we will look at. If you can relate to other human beings, what it does to human relationships. I suggest, just for a little while, you stay here when this body has moved away. Just stay until you feel the impulse to get up. Just stay for a little while in this energy field, in the stillness, and see that the body on this chair here is not really needed. That's enough, what's there. Thank you.
This concludes lesson 2.